You know, and then after I realized, okay, well, you know, the person asking me to speak is aware of the fact that I've had a legal drink. I guess that's, like, allowed here. You know, my next thought was, like, that's kind of an intimidating meeting to speak at. Because I remember coming here when I had, like, way less time sober, and I didn't really know very many people in the room, and I was scared. You know, I didn't know how to approach anybody. And, you know, I'm at a little bit of a different place in my life now. Like, I'm no longer terrified to be sitting up here in front of you, whereas if, like, you had told me that the first time I was here, I would have been like, nah, that's okay. But that's not, like, a feeling that's unfamiliar to me. You know, discomfort and feeling like I have nothing to offer was nothing new. That was kind of my default setting, like, my whole life. I remember, like, even as a little kid, you know, you hear people say, like, I never felt like I was part of it. Like, I fit that, too. I remember being 8 years old in third grade and walking around the schoolyard by myself at lunch because I didn't have anybody to play with. And I thought, like, if I just kept walking around, nobody would notice that I was by myself. You know, I remember, like, being invited, you know, getting the, like, obligatory entire class invite to a birthday party. And I didn't even want to go because I didn't know how to have a conversation, man. It was like the first day I got sober, like, I didn't know how to have a conversation. I didn't know how to just, like, talk about the day or the weather, or, like, you'd say something and I'd respond to it, like, you know, 40 seconds later, or it didn't even fit into the conversation anymore because I was so inside my head and just analyzing every single thing that came out of my mouth. And, you know, as a kid, I was really shy and I observed things, and I eventually, I think, kind of caught on to how to at least act normal or pass as though I wasn't just sitting inside my own head all the time. And, you know, I've been a big fan of, like, reinventing myself. You know, I was, like, as a kid, I would make up fake names for myself, like, assuming that I could just take on a whole new identity whenever I wanted, and, like, I wouldn't answer to my mom unless she called me by whatever name I was going by that day. But, you know, I switched schools when I was in sixth grade, and I was like, this is it. This is my opportunity. I can be whoever I want to be. And I started going by Kate instead of Katie. And I just thought, all right, I know how to act normal. Let me just do it. And, like, as an alcoholic, I tend to take things to extremes, and that was included in that, you know? So, you know, not only did I act normal, like, I excelled at it. Like, I did really, really well in school. I was on all the clubs and all the sports teams. And if there was, like, a checklist of what a good high school life should look like, I checked all the boxes. I did all the stuff. It looked like I had friends. By anybody looking in, it would have looked like, all right, yeah, that girl has her shit together. But inside, like, I hated myself. Like, I still, like, never got rid of that feeling of having nothing to offer and not being worth any of your attention or love and just bringing absolutely nothing anywhere. And that changed the first time I got drunk, because for the first time, my mind, which is normally so loud, it's like radio static, and I can't even separate, you know, I couldn't even separate the voices that were inside. Like, it was lowered just enough, like, just enough that I could have a conversation with you and not be thinking about what I was going to say and how you were going to perceive me and if I was saying the right thing and if you thought I was cool. And I could just talk. You know, I could flirt with guys who previously to that had been, like, very scary, and I was pretty sure I would screw it up if I had a conversation with one. And I loved it, you know, just that sense of not worrying about everything all the time. And I chased it, you know, and things started getting sacrificed really, really quickly. You know, I went away to college in the Midwest, and I joined the volleyball team there. They had recruited me for volleyball, and I quit within, like, 2 weeks because there's a rule that, you know, you get drug tested. And I was like, all right, that's not going to work. And, you know, it's also really hard to, like, do two-a-day practices when you're hungover and, like, sweating out tequila. And I went to school for the first semester. I was pre-med, and then 8 a.m. classes became a little too early, and then 10 a.m. classes, and then 2 p.m. classes, and before long, like, I wasn't really going to class. And, you know, nobody wants to let you be a doctor when you can't pass, like, introductory bio. So I dropped that in favor of a less demanding major. And these things that I wanted to do, I thought, like, okay, great, like, I'm going to have this awesome college volleyball career. I'm going to become pre-med and be a surgeon. Like, those things got tossed out so quickly, and I didn't care, like, at all. These were things I wanted to do for my entire high school career and before then. And it just, whatever, man. Like, you give me that thing that makes my head shut up, and, like, I don't care what gets in the way. I don't care about it. And that, you know, eventually transferred over to people, too. Like, I would go from friend group to friend group because I kind of, like, I was a terrible friend. I was really flaky, and I was dishonest, and, you know, I didn't really care if that guy was your boyfriend, if I was drunk. And, you know, I destroyed all the relationships I was ever in because I was incapable of being honest or faithful or, you know, living the way that this program teaches me to live or tries to teach me how to live. And it didn't matter, you know, it didn't matter at all. And drinking, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, it was miserable right from the start. I mean, the consequences were miserable right from the start, but they were pretty small in the beginning compared to what alcohol was doing for me. You know, the loss of, like, a career and a sport and some friends were nothing compared to just the comfort of being able to have a conversation and not feel like I could be in a room like this and be totally by myself. So I, you know, I started drinking more and more throughout college. I stayed in college and graduated college based on the power of amphetamines. And, you know, it's because I lived my life in two states. I was either drunk or hungover. And that is not a life that's conducive to pretty much anything else besides being drunk or hungover. So I graduated college, and all my friends were doing things like going to law school or grad school or, like, you know, making the world better and joining, like, Teach for America or the Peace Corps. And I was just kind of like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And I hung around for a little while after I graduated because I didn't know. I had no idea what I wanted to do. What I wanted to do was get drunk. If I wasn't drunk, I wanted to be drinking. And if I was drinking, I wanted to keep drinking. Like, that was my list of priorities. And if you could provide that to me, then I wanted you in my life. And if you couldn't, then, like, that's fine. There's somebody else who can. You can go away now. It was a really empty way of life, but I was still kind of under the impression that I had control over it. Because people in my life told me I did. You know, my family would see me get absolutely obliterated on holidays and just say, why can't you just slow down? Like, just drink a little bit less, control it. So I was surrounded by people telling me I could. So I tried to. What that looked like was me only buying a certain amount of you know, whatever I was drinking at the time. And I'd inevitably run through that. And by that time, like, the phenomenon of craving that I learned about here that I didn't think, you know, I didn't know existed, that would have kicked in. So if I finished the few bottles of wine I bought and I didn't have access to more, then, like, that's when I go into the cabinet and drink the vanilla extract. And when I'm done with that, that's when I drink the Listerine. And when I'm done with that, that's when I drink the rubbing alcohol. Like, that's what controlled drinking looks like for me. But I still had it in my head that, you know, one day I could be, like, that girl at the bar with a glass of wine, like, you know, flirting with some guy and having friends and interesting conversations, when in reality I was 22 years old drinking rubbing alcohol at 3 a.m. by myself. Like, the most socialization I got then was, like, going on chat roulette when I was shit-faced. But, like, like, the delusion runs deep, man. It does. And I still thought that I could get back to it. I didn't understand what alcoholism was. I didn't understand what an alcoholic was. I knew very few people in recovery. I had zero knowledge of the 12 steps, and I had a really big victimization complex where everything was the fault of the people around me. It was, you know, my friends because they didn't invite me out, or it was, you know, a guy I was dating because he didn't treat me the way I deserved, or it was, like, my mom's fault for getting on my case about everything. So in September of, I guess it was 2011, after I'd been away from college for a little while and all my friends were getting their shit together, I decided I needed to get away from everything that was causing all my problems. And I packed up my suitcase and I had $800 and I moved to Mexico. I don't speak Spanish. I had no plan. I thought, people there might want to learn English. Maybe I'll teach them how to speak English. And that was as far as my plan got. Like, it wasn't a plan. It was, I think, probably 2 days there before I, you know, came to that realization that everything that I had been blaming for the misery and insanity of my life was now several thousand miles away from me. And I was waking up on the floor of my apartment having absolutely no idea of what happened in the 3 days or 2 days or whatever it was leading up to that. You know, that thought that, like, I'm laying on the floor because it's the coolest place in the room and I can smell the alcohol coming out of my pores. And I was the only person there I knew, you know? It wasn't anybody else's fault because everything was far away and I was doing the exact same thing. And that was when I realized I had a serious problem. And, you know, then I did nothing about it. I continued that for a little while. I eventually made way back up to New York. And I meant to come up here temporarily and ended up, I think I applied to a bunch of jobs in a blackout because I was getting phone calls the next day about people interested in my resume, and I had no idea why. But I ended up getting a job, you know, with an interview I attended drunk because I was at the point where I didn't know how to do anything sober. Like, I hadn't done anything sober in so long. And what my life looked like then was, I would wake up in the morning, usually still drunk from the night before. I would take the bus from where I was living in Staten Island into Manhattan. I would sit down at my job. I would start getting the shakes around 11 a.m. So at lunch, I would go out, buy alcohol, drink in the bathroom stall by myself, finish out the day, take the bus home, get drunk, pass out by 9, and do the exact same thing every single day. On the weekends, I just started drinking heavily earlier. And that's what I did. You know, and in those years of drinking, like, you know, tons of bad stuff happened. And what led to me coming into AA was not anything circumstantially bad. It was just a regular day. You know, I woke up and, you know, like most other days, I couldn't remember anything from the night before. And I asked the guy that I was dating at the time. I woke up in his apartment, and I saw that I had my dog with me, and the back of his leg was all bloody, and I had no idea how it happened. So I asked this guy, I was like, what happened to the dog? Why is the dog bleeding? And he said, are you kidding me? And he just looked at me with that look of, like, disgust that I had become accustomed to at that point. Like, that's just kind of how people looked at me after they got to know me. And he said, you came back here at, like, 4 a.m. dragging the dog behind you. I said, where was I? I was like, I don't know. I had no idea. The last memory I had from the night before, it was still light out. So, like, I have no idea what happened in those hours. I had no idea. And I got so upset, you know, because that dog, like, it sounds so cheesy to say, but, like, that dog was the last friend I had left. Like, I had destroyed all my other friendships. But in my head, I'm thinking, like, you know, I'm hurting this dog. Like, what's next? What am I going to screw up next? Because my life at that point was so small. You know, alcohol initially made my life huge. I could talk to people. I could go places and see things and add to conversation. But by the end, I was by myself, and I realized, like, what am I going to screw up next? And I realized, like, that day, I already screwed everything up. Like, I threw away opportunity after opportunity. I destroyed all my friendships, all my relationships. You know, my family didn't know what to do with me. And something inside me broke. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like my mind imploded. And I just couldn't do it. And that was kind of as far as I got. Like, I didn't know, like, do I still want to be alive? I don't know. I wasn't contemplating, like, any of those kinds of questions. All I knew was that, like, I couldn't do it anymore. Like, it had stopped working. And I Googled AA. And, you know, like I said, I had no knowledge of this. I knew, like, two people in recovery. And I showed up to a meeting in Staten Island. It was a midnight meeting that they have there. And I remember I was coming from a family party, and I had this, like, white dress on. And, you know, from a distance, I looked fine. And then you got up to me, and, like, there was just, like, mascara down my face. And I was all puffy, you know, the way you get when you drink a lot. And I was a mess because I didn't know what to do. And I sat through that meeting, and, like, when it ended, I ran out immediately because I didn't want to talk to anybody because, like, I couldn't stop shaking. I didn't understand that I was detoxing because I you know, I didn't know anything really about alcoholism, despite, you know, engaging in it for a while. But I thought you had to drink for like decades in order to detox from alcohol. I just thought like I stopped drinking and got really sick at the same time. Like days later, somebody was like, "Were you a daily drinker?" I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Oh, that's detox." I'm like, "Oh, okay." You know, flash forward 3 years. Now she sponsors me, but you know, she knew a little bit more than I did, and still does. But I walked down the hill and I sat on the curb and I was just crying because I had no idea what to do. You know, I knew I couldn't keep drinking because it wasn't working, but you know how I felt in that moment. I knew I couldn't be sober either. Like, how was I supposed to survive like that? And some girl walked down the hill and she's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. And she's like, "No, seriously, like, are you okay?" And I was honest with somebody for the first time in a really long time, and I told her, "No, I'm not okay." And she like pulled me up off the curb and led me up the hill and introduced me to a bunch of people. And, you know, I'm looking through my phone to try to, like, looking through my bag to find my phone, and, like, I'm pulling out, like, little vodka bottles, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, you should definitely be here." you know, I got so many phone numbers that night, and I kind of, I don't know, you know, I was given a gift when I got sober, and it was just, like, the ability to say okay when somebody told me to do something. Because I was totally out of ideas. I had tried for a really long time to be independent and self-sufficient, thinking it was like this badge of honor, not realizing that I was depending on everybody for everything. But one of those girls started sponsoring me, and I didn't know that like you could be in AA without a sponsor and doing the steps. If you're new to this, like, do that stuff anyway. But you know, so I was lucky. I got somebody that threw me into all of that really quickly. You know, I started doing the steps really quickly. I had done my first fifth step at, like, I don't know, maybe like 60 days sober. And then I got a boyfriend. So I was cured. And I got up to step 11 with that sponsor. I had been lying to her the entire time. She wanted me to meditate and pray, and I didn't believe in God, so I told her I was praying, and I wasn't. And she told me to meditate. She's like, "Try just 3 minutes a day," because that was all I would agree to. But I couldn't sit there. I couldn't do it. I couldn't be in my head. Oh, my God. I would sit down, and I would get, like, 15 seconds in, and I would just start crying because it wouldn't shut up. You know, everybody hates me, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I have nothing to offer, and I'm going to suck at life, and, you know, I mean, I guess probably a lot of people in this room can understand what I'm talking about since we're here. But, you know, I got up to step 11, and I wasn't doing anything that she had told me to be doing, but I had the boyfriend, so I was okay. And so I dropped her. I thought, like, I don't need this. Like, I'm happy now. I'm cured. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And it took maybe... it took a few weeks before I started getting a little nuts. You know, before, in sobriety, I destroyed that relationship because I don't know how to be in a relationship, man. Like, I'm over 3 years sober, and I'm still, like, really not the expert at all. But I, in that period of time, like, I was flying through sponsors because I went back to that idea that, like, a person can fix me. So I flew through, like, 4 sponsors in the course of like 3 months because I just needed the right person that I would listen to that could fix my life for me. And I didn't have to put any work in. In fact, I could lie about the work I was doing and it would still work because I would have like the sponsor. And at like 8 or 9 months sober, I hit a place in sobriety that was so much worse than anything I had ever experienced mentally. Because at least before I got sober, I always had that, like, if nothing else, I can blame it on alcohol. But now the alcohol was gone. There hadn't been alcohol in my system in 3/4 of a year. And I was surrounded by people who loved me and cared about me and were trying to help me. I was out of my mind. I did not know what to do. I couldn't sleep. I wasn't eating. And I was sober. And in my mind, I had gone through the steps and I experienced AA. And So maybe I'm not an alcoholic, maybe I'm just crazy. So I went up to somebody who I knew had a lot of time, and I asked, what can I be prescribed and still technically be considered sober? And I was told, you don't need to be sedated, because at this point, like, I wanted, like, horse tranquilizers. I just wanted to be, like, knocked the fuck out. And that person told me, like, you don't need to be sedated. You need to have a spiritual experience. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Okay. Go ahead. Tell me, please. Tell me how your magical white light is going to cure me. But I was stubborn, man. Like, to this day, that's one of my biggest character defects, is that I really like to be right. You know, people are like, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? I'm like, being right makes me happy, so we're good. But, you know, I had, like, one little shred of willingness left in me. Thank you. I had one little shred of willingness left in me, and I said, all right, okay, let's do this. And I like to know how things work, you know, totally ignoring the fact that, like, I use my cell phone a million times a day, and I could not build you a cell phone or tell you how this functions, but, like, you know, when it came to my own recovery, like, I had to know how it was going to work or else it wasn't going to. And, you know, I got to, like, step two, and they're like, restore to sanity. I'm like, we're not working with much here. There's not going to be any restoration going on. Like, we're going to have to build this from the ground up. And I started actually doing the things that were suggested of me. And I didn't think they were going to work because I didn't understand how. But little by little, I began to build up time. And that voice in my head started to get quiet. And to this day, like, I have no idea how that happens. Like, that's I think, what kind of led me to believe in a higher power, is that I saw a bunch of stuff around me that didn't make any sense. Like, I was a mess. I was not really capable of giving you much of anything except maybe an opportunity to be of service. But people were helping me. And everywhere I looked, there were people helping people that had nothing to offer. And that's just kind of like, that's kind of contrary to, like, everything you think would make sense, right? Like, we want to get stuff, especially me. Like, I wanted to get stuff. So why were you helping me when I had nothing to offer? And that little bit of acknowledging that there existed something that I didn't understand opened my mind enough to let more in. For me to say, like, I don't need to get it. I don't need to have every answer. I don't need to know in order for it to work. And you know, I started to take commitments, and I started to actually be able to connect with people. And I started to actually, you know, be okay with being uncomfortable. Like, before, I thought discomfort would kill me. Like, anxiety and, like, that feeling that it's not going to be okay. Like, I thought it would make me die. And it's funny because, you know, something like this, something like sitting at this meeting talking to you guys, this would have been something I was so uncomfortable with. But it's like, I've done so much in the past 3 years that's made me uncomfortable that I've almost become comfortable with discomfort, which, I don't know, maybe makes sense. But, like, as a result of that, I have, you know, I've met people that have just given me opportunity after opportunity. I've done so much more than I thought I was capable of doing. Like, I just got reminded, I was at a 4-day silent meditation retreat. I just saw somebody here that I was there with, and I remembered, like, I was the girl that couldn't meditate for 3 minutes and would lie to my sponsor about it. But I voluntarily went and was quiet for, you know, 3.5 days meditating. Like, that's not something that somebody like me does. You know, I have the opportunity to be a part of ECPA. Like, that's not something that I do. Like, I don't have friends that come with me from Staten Island to hear me speak. I don't have people ask me to speak. Like, these are not things that somebody like me did. But I'm doing them anyway. You know, these things work without me getting how or why. And, you know, life isn't perfect. Like, I have situations all the time that I don't know how to deal with. But I feel like there are a lot of people in this world that kind of become who they are by accident. You know, they grow up and they just, you know, unconsciously become their adult selves. And here, like, I had an opportunity from you guys to show me what it means to be a sober woman of dignity and grace and how to do that on a daily basis and how to actually apply the things that we learn here, you know, and how to do stuff like this and not want to crawl out of my skin, you know, and how to look forward to after the meeting talking to you guys instead of running away. And it'll be okay. Thank you.